Top 100
Project.
And action.
Hello, gang. Thanks for listening to the Top 100 Project, where we revisit the classic films on the American Film Institute's 1998 and 2007 lists of 100 greatest American movies. Spoilers are coming. We'll hold nothing back, and we will destroy every secret in this picture. I'm Ryan Ellis with my lovely wife, Bev.
Hi.
Now, you may hear in both of our voices right away, I'm sure you've already heard in mine, that I don't sound too good. 4 or 5 days ago, I couldn't even talk this well, so we're both battling colds. Forgive the terrible voices. We'll do the best we can to soldier through this.
Hopefully by the end, we're not just, like, creaking and whispering.
Yeah, like I said, I had laryngitis flat out for a while, so this is an improvement. Okay, so the coming attractions trivia question for this week's movie, All About Eve. It isn't an Oscar, and it isn't a Tony. Whose name is on the award that Eve wins at the beginning of the picture?
Sarah Siddons?
You got it. Oh, yes. We almost had it. You missed the S.
Ah!
Sarah Siddons.
When I remembered the question when we were watching the movie, and I was trying to memorize it, but then I think about a little while has passed since we saw the movie, so yeah. I lost it.
Yeah, the Siddons Award was invented for the movie, but it became real a few years later.
No.
Yeah.
Is Sarah Siddons, like, a real person?
Yeah, she's a Welsh stage actress.
No.
And then you have years after this movie, because of the popularity of All About Eve, they made a real award for her.
That's funny.
In her name.
Of all the origins.
Yeah. All right. The Top 100 Project's 38th movie, All About Eve, was 16th on AFI's 1998 Top 100 list between Star Wars and The African Queen, but took a dozen-point drop to 28th in 2007 between High Noon and Double Indemnity, one of our favorites of recent months. All About Eve premiered on October 13th, 1950. Then 20th Century Fox put it out there for an Oscar run on November 9th. Massive hit! Everybody flocked to the cinema to see a movie about the theater. Bev has our skinny.
Beloved but aging Broadway actress Margot Channing, played by Betty Davis, brings an eager fan named Eve Harrington, played by Anne Baxter, into her inner circle. Eve works as Margot's enthusiastic assistant until an opportunity to become her understudy crops up. Eve's schemes to usurp Margot upset everyone, except oily theater critic Addison DeWitt, played by George Sanders, whose role as Eve's Svengali goes further than even she expected.
Evil man. In a nutshell, stalker successfully supersedes superior star. Right off the bat, I want to talk about something that you didn't say in the skinny specifically, but it's Celeste Holmes' character, Karen, who brings Eve in. She sees her outside the theater.
That's right.
Come on in, meet Margot. Mm-hmm. And Karen is also the main narrator of this movie. It starts off with Addison. The very beginning, you hear him dryly describing all the people in the movie that we care about. And then Karen takes over. The only time we ever hear narration, which is not often, but whenever we do, it's always Karen. And ironically, in their world, she's the most, I'll say it, the most useless person. But she's also the reason the movie ever happens.
She's the only one that's not really a part of the theater. Like, everybody works in the theater except for her. She's just a playwright's wife. So she's the outsider looking in, and she has that perspective. So she's the narrator. She doesn't have to have an important part. Her important part is the observer.
Except, as I said, the important part is that it wouldn't have happened if she didn't take pity on this girl.
Yeah, that's
who
true.
Who was pretending to be a poor little girl outside the theater. Yeah. And there's a big spoiler off the bat. I think anybody who's heard of All About Eve, even if they haven't seen it, probably know that, well, the movie's called All About Eve, and she must be a key factor, but she's always playing. The best performance that Eve Harrington ever gives is Eve Harrington.
Yeah,
it's which isn't even her real name.
Yeah, and she's always on. Like, by the time you see her break character and be herself, I mean, what's her real name?
Gertrude something. That was a trivia question. There's the first trivia question.
Oh, sorry.
Ashton answered.
I'll ask you, what is Eve Harrington's real name?
Gertrude something or other. I forgot her last name. I didn't write that part down.
So by the time she finally breaks character and you see Gertrude, it's like an hour and a half in, and she's just been
maybe more
solid, solid Eve throughout, and she never rests for a second. And it's this really, she never breaks character. She's very persistent and very convincing. Like, her performance is great because she's essentially playing two different people, and she's incredibly convincing as both. The first time I saw this movie, I didn't really know where it was going. I suspected that she was up to something, but she was so convincing as the good girl that I actually did begin to doubt that she was the villain of the film. I didn't really know enough about the movie before I saw it to know what was going to happen, but by the time it becomes clear, which is before she drops character, but still.
Yeah, yeah. Except again, Karen is part of organizing the whole thing. They get Margot to town.
Yeah, and then she's the very fake complicit
gas thing with Lloyd's car, and then Eve gets her big performance. And really, in the end, she doesn't really do anything wrong. But it's not moral, I suppose. Except Karen's involved, and Margot never finds that out.
She helps Eve out more than anybody, and Eve turns on her the worst, because even though she brought Eve in the first place and she arranged to have Margot miss a performance so that Eve could be her understudy and perform the show and get everybody's attention, even though she does all those things, Eve still actively and aggressively steals Karen's husband, or attempts to steal Karen's husband.
Well, that's one thing I was thinking about, again, seeing this movie so many times. I was specifically looking this time for that scene or that moment. Mm-hmm. But we never see it on screen.
No, that's true. She could says, be lying.
She tells Addison that Lloyd came to me and he's going to leave Karen for me, but we don't see anything like that.
And even the phone call that's made late at night by her roommate that we learn is a ruse to just kind of convince Karen that Lloyd is cheating on her.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Is it Karen that answers the phone and takes that phone call?
It is. And then Lloyd picks it up and listens, and he doesn't have any idea anything's even going on.
Yeah. So it is true. Like, it could all be a lie. Although, why Eve would lie to Addison about having an affair with Lloyd
and about marrying him, because that obviously, if that's not going to happen, he'll know that. Everyone will know that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, why she would even want Addison to believe that isn't really clear. Maybe
we should,
it's true.
Maybe we should look up and see if it was a deleted scene. Maybe it was supposed to have actually been
in the movie. Yeah, because I got the impression that Karen really, like, when she forgives Lloyd, she's forgiving Lloyd, like, for what he did, which happened. I never got an impression that there was any doubt in her mind that Lloyd and Eve were having a relationship.
We spent a lot of time talking about everybody except the biggest star in the movie, and the one that a lot of people will say is the best performance of any character ever given, Margot Channing, played by Bette Davis.
Yeah.
What do you think about her?
Oh, I love her. I love this movie. Love this movie. I've seen it twice now, and it just, when I was doing the research and I was reading about it, I maybe want to put it in the player and watch it all over again right now. And she's a big part of it. There's no slouch. There's no weak link in this movie. Everybody's performance is really exceptional. Lloyd, you disagree.
Yeah, there's a weak link, and it's Lloyd.
What?
Hugh Marlowe is not a very great actor.
Okay.
There is a really fun moment on the Day the Earth Stood Still commentary.
Yeah.
Nicholas Meyer, who wrote and directed some of the Star Trek movies, is basically the host for Robert Wise. He was an old man by the time they did the commentary for The Day of the Earth Stood Still. Marlowe's in that, too, the year after All About Eve. And they're not very... Well, Wise is not mean, but Meyer is, and impugning his ability. And I think they even bring up All About Eve.
Really?
And yeah, he's pretty wooden, and I think both movies. I think they're
I guess so, but I like how him and Bill...
Gary Merrill. I like him a lot better.
I like him, too. It's not... The movie's really not about them.
No, it's not about them, no.
They're kind of like... In a way, they're like the wives and girlfriends in this movie. And it's really about the women and these women's relationship with each other. It's really a great big deal of it. It's just a movie about women. Maybe that's why I love this movie and I merely like Sunset Boulevard. But this movie, like, really captures me. When we were talking about Bette Davis, and her performance is just magnetic and amazing. She's just so brilliantly over the top as that selfish, dramatic diva, but she can play that. She can play that almost you think despicable she's over the
top?
Person.
You think she's over the top?
Dude, she's her like the character of Margot is over the top. That party scene when she's having her hissy fit and she like very much decides that she's going to ruin everybody's night, that's over the top. I'm not saying that Bette Davis played it over the top. In fact, she didn't, because she still finds a way to make that character who's so flawed, so insecure, such a baby, so immature, you know, always inconveniencing people and making them late and acting like such a big shot, you still empathize with her. You still are on her side.
We've
talked
about this a lot lately with the bad guys who've been the stars of the movies, like Bogart and Sierra Madre.
But she's not. Would you call her a bad guy? Would you call
her... No, I'm just saying that it's because the great actors and the great actresses make us like them. So if they are playing a villain, it's hard to be against them. Yeah. Or if they're playing Shades of Grey character, or in this case, somebody who isn't doing anything wrong, but who's very flawed. And as you say, there are moments about her that if you were in her life, you'd want to punch her in the head.
Yeah.
You don't, because it's Bette Davis.
She could so easily be despicable, but instead you sympathize with her and you stay on her side. And there's this like warmth and this humanity to her that's really still gets you and compels you and makes you love the film. I mean, people accuse this movie of being campy, and it's probably her performance that's a big part of it. But I don't know, I love it. I feel like it's still very human.
Oh, I agree with that for sure. That she is, I would say, the best thing in the movie. I used to think it was Ann Baxter many years ago when I first saw the film, because of how duplicitous she is, and how well she hides it, and how well the script hides it. Joseph L. Mankiewicz, the writer-director, first time we'll mention him. But Davis is the star. Now, did you realize she only had 16 shooting days? Did you read that part online?
No.
I did, and I'm surprised to see that that means she wasn't in the movie for all that much, really. A lot of the movie takes place talking about her, but she's not in it necessarily.
Isn't that funny? Her presence just permeates like every scene of that
film. So obviously Eve's in the movie more, but they were both nominated for a leading actress at the Oscars. Neither one of them won. Neither did Gloria Swanson. Judy Holliday won for a movie called Born Yesterday, a comedy performance, a good one.
Yeah.
But everyone thinks that Swanson lost because, well, really three of them, I guess you could say, split the vote.
Yeah.
And people say Baxter should have been the supporting category. Well, Baxter's in the movie more than Margot.
Yeah.
I should say more than Davis is.
The movie's called All About Eve.
Yeah. But this is Davis's only AFR. And that's kind of a shame. Now, she didn't make a ton of great movies. She's like I would say Spencer Tracy is a good comparison. Great actor, but not a ton of great movies that she was in. People disagree with me about Spencer Tracy, but I don't think he's in that many movies that are all that wonderful, as good as he is. Same with her here. She worked for nearly 40 more years after this picture, making Whatever Happened to Baby Jane and lots of TV appearances. And she won Oscars much earlier in her career for Jezebel and Dangerous in the late 30s. That's when she was getting her start. And we have said this phrase a few times. She had been box office poison going into this film. People had accused her of being that, and this resurrected her. Yeah,
she almost didn't get this part. A lot of actresses were up
originally
for this
part. Claudette Colbert had the role. Then she got hurt doing something else, another production, I think it was.
Yeah.
And they had to recast.
But even after Colbert had to bow out because of her injury, there were lots of different actresses up for the part.
It's been said this is based on Tallulah Bankhead. I don't know if she was up for the role itself, and it's been disputed that it was based on her, that she was the Margot influence. But she probably was in there. I mean, anytime there's a great role for a woman, anytime there's a great role for anybody, you hear about all the people that are considered. When we get to the movies in the 90s, I'm sure we're going to find in our research that 40 people could have been Forrest Gump, and 25 could have been Captain Miller in Saving Private Ryan, another 15 could have been in The Sixth Sense, and 417 could have been in the Lord of the Rings series. So let's get back to the story itself, which has a similar theme to Sunset Boulevard.
Very
an aging
similar.
Actress who has I wouldn't say an affair, the Gary Merrill character is a younger man, but this time they're, you know, willingly together. It's not like he's being
forced. Yeah, he's in love with her.
And he's got as much power, if not more, than she does. He's a director. He goes to Hollywood at one point when they mention Daryl Zanuck, the producer of this name. He's mentioned in the movie as a producer that Bill goes to meet with or work with or something. And Zanuck did produce this, as he produced Grapes of Wrath, and was a Fox executive for many years, so a lot of Fox productions would have had his name on it. His son Richard would go on to produce many big films, including Jaws.
And that Zanuck thing that's self-referential, also like Sunset Boulevard, where they were just very aware of themselves, meta in the 50s before anybody
used the word.
Both these
productions mentioned people in the business quite a bit.
Yeah,
this one being about the theater, I don't think they mentioned a whole lot of theater people we didn't know. Speaking of that, did you notice that this is one of those movies that's very self-contained? There aren't that many people in the movie other than theater people.
Yeah.
I mean, there's obviously extras, but I don't know if there's ever been anybody mentioned or talked to or dealt with who's not involved in their circle in some way or another.
Maybe because in a way the world of the theater is kind of a character in itself. Mm-hmm. They keep referring to how that world is different and that world works in a strange way, and that's kind of how somebody like Eve could be drawn into it and get away with what she gets away with.
Yeah.
And just that obsession and that desire, and what kind of people occupy a world that's kind of that crazy, where you have to work that hard and compete that much for just applause. And they say it themselves, you know, it's not really about the money, it's about the applause, it's about the fans, it's just about that adoration of strangers.
Actors, rock stars, wrestlers, all these people that perform live in front of people,
mm-hmm.
when they're off the stage, either for a short time or for good, if they're honest enough, they'll almost always bring it back to that. I miss that instant. Comedians, another one I forgot, comedians is a maybe better example than any of the rest of them, actually. They miss that adrenaline you get from making the people do whatever they're supposed to do. The cry, to laugh, to be thrilled, to be scared, whatever the emotion they're supposed to feel.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose the other thing is both All About Eve and Sunset Boulevard are very cloistered. It's all about the people within the businesses that the movies care about. It's also to streamline them. We don't need a movie that's 3 hours long so we can see somebody buying gum and talking to some commoner. It doesn't really matter. Who cares? Did you find it hard to believe that everyone, including Margot, who's not a dummy, would be this taken in by Eve? They let her into their inner circle instantly. They meet her that night, and she's basically Margot's assistant the next day. And the one person who does see through her is Thelma Ritter's character, Birdie, who was barely in the movie, and we don't even see her leave the movie. It's not like she has a big fight and you're fired, get out of here. She just is just gone.
Yeah, apparently they wrote out some jealousy scenes of hers and just tried to like make it more subtle that she had
a problem because it would have been too obvious that
because Eve like kind of takes over her job, but she doesn't like Eve from the beginning. She's suspicious from the beginning. Mm-hmm. It was a little out there that they took her in as quickly as they did, that within days she's moved into Margot's house and she's working for her. That was a bit of a stretch, but without it there would be no movie. Like, I guess they could have drawn it out a little more.
Well, and as bad as Eve does get, and as much of a loathsome quality as she starts to have as a human being, Margot could have fired her long before she... Well, she never really does fire her, but Margot could have gotten rid of her if she wanted to get rid of her bad enough.
Yeah, Margot didn't catch on as quickly as everybody else did, though. Well, Birdie catches on first, and then Margot, and Karen is the last woman to catch on to her.
Mm-hmm.
And other than Addison kind of always being on to her from the beginning, but... Lloyd and Sam, it's not till the very end they catch on there's anything wrong with her. In fact, Lloyd, we're not even sure that he ever does.
He's casts pretty her dumb.
In his play. Yeah. But I think that's kind of appropriate for the theme. I mean, this whole movie's really about female power dynamics. So naturally, women are going to catch on to what Eve's doing faster than the guys are. It's like one of my favorite things about it is how authentically introspective it is into like those workings of women and how in the 50s, you know, they're robbed of any actual authority in their lives and they're at the mercy of powerful men. So they have to find these underhanded ways to get what they want without ever tipping their hands to those in power that they're attempting to control their circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone has to feel like the advantages paid to her were gifts bestowed by someone else that came up with the idea all on their own. And if ever revealing that a woman desires agency in her own life could harm her chances of achieving it. Men don't see that because in those circumstances would never ever have to behave like that to get what they want, but the women do. Like, there's a great line that Margot has when she's beginning to be suspicious of Eve and she's trying to convince Bill and Lloyd that something's up with her, and somebody asks her, "When did you get so cynical?" And she says, "The minute I discovered I was different from the little boys." Because it's true, women just have to behave differently, but men don't catch on.
Yeah, yeah. It's like I can boil down Eve into one sentence. She's the Jay Leno of the 50s.
Why?
She's the weasel trying to get in there and steal someone else's job and usurp them.
Come now, let's not start this debate. Never been usually a Jay Leno defender.
Well, only because of what Bill Maher said that's very smartly at one point to defend Leno, which is he wanted a job and NBC wanted him for that job. Yeah. NBC's the bad guy. It wasn't really Leno's fault exactly, except that just like when Leno got the job over Letterman to take over for Carson in the early 90s, it was his business manager that kind of power-armed NBC.
And back then, certainly nobody could have blamed him for wanting that job.
Mm-hmm. Except in both cases of the real person and the fake character, Leno and Eve, that's the business. And there's a certain part where you gotta say, too bad.
And there's a certain part of this movie where they say, hey, too bad. You know, when everything is said and done, Margot concedes. And she says,
yeah, she realizes, I'm getting too old to play the character in the new play that Lloyd has, which is what Eve blackmails Karen about. And Margot's the one that realizes, I shouldn't play this character anymore. Doesn't even know the blackmail is coming. And I'm not going to do the new play. It isn't for me.
And you almost feel like she doesn't necessarily blame Eve for behaving the way she does. It's just kind of the world that they live in, that somebody has to be that conniving. She never had to be because she was a child actress. So she came up kind of on her own and she had that good fortune. But in order to have Eve's good fortune, you kind of do have to be that underhanded. And you know what? There's probably tons of actresses just like Eve in Hollywood and Broadway. I'm sure it happens.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt about that. If Eve is Jay Leno, then Addison DeWitt is the movie's Joe Mankiewicz, the director and writer. He's the one. He's the puppet master. He's the one trying to pull all the strings. He pulls Eve's strings, obviously. Mm-hmm. You wonder if maybe Addison, the way pre-internet, didn't find out about the real Eve, Gertrude, whatever her last name is, and her real story right away and know about it all along.
Oh, I suspect that he did, because the minute he meets her, he starts asking her about her background and kind of digging up about it. I suspect that he knew all along. He just waited for the perfect moment
to pull the strings. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great performance by George Sanders, too, in many movies.
What does Addison want? Like, what is his angle, anyway?
Well, here's the thing that we talked about before we turned the microphone on. The internet talks about how both Eve and Addison are homosexual, that Eve is a lesbian, Addison is gay. The Eve thing is more obvious, because neither one of them seems sexual, but Eve being attracted to Margot could be part of why she's doing this. She wants her job, and she wants her stardom and she wants all those kinds of things. But I can understand her being interested in women as part of that. I mean, this, I don't think it even matters, though. But the one that I find to be less believable and less interesting is actually the one that is more mysterious. Because if Addison is gay, then why does he essentially say to Eve, when he tells her that he knows everything about her and uses that as his leverage, he says, I own you. I'm going to do whatever I want with you.
Yeah, but why does he want her?
Yeah. Right. If it's just for sexual favors, then okay. Then
and they never right show, they never show them having sex or kissing or anything like that. They kind of imply maybe she's his date, but there's like nothing sexual about it. Mm-hmm. He doesn't seem lecherous in any way whatsoever. But
that may be the movie that in 1950 couldn't show any really overtly sexual, though.
Nor could they show anything overtly homosexual. But maybe the reason that these characters are homosexuals is because the same reason a lot of characters in the 50s and 40s were homosexuals. It's because it was considered an evil character trait. So you see the gay men in The Third Man. You see Peter Lorre in Maltese Falcon, like a great documentary and book called Celluloid Closet talks about this. They talk about this movie specifically, but one of the things it addresses is how it was just kind of a blanket characteristic given to evil characters because the public considered homosexuality such a vile sin.
So it's a shorthand.
Yeah, it's a shorthand for they're evil and they're gay. So that just proves how evil they are. That's part of it, too. And apparently Mankiewicz did not have any love for the homosexuals, though he denied it later. There was rumors that he just had nothing but contempt for homosexuals.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe he came around later in his life. In the 70s and 80s, it would have been played for laughs, and they would have been turned into clowns, and that's, you know, its own form of homophobia as well.
Or in Basic Instinct, it turns into that trait makes you a vile killer.
Yeah, just like this. It's an evil trait.
So DeWitt is played by George Sanders. We've said that. I find it interesting that he won the only acting Oscar in this movie as Best Supporting Actor.
Mm-hmm.
And yet four women were nominated. That's never happened before or since. Four women in one movie. The two leading actresses, Davis and Baxter. Celeste Holm plays Karen for supporting. And then Thelma Ritter for supporting as well for her very brief performance as Birdie early on. The four of them. And then he won for supporting. And he's the only one in the movie. So he represents the whole cast. And yet he's one of the only guys. And easily the best of the three male actors. I mean, Gary Merrill is fine as Bill. And as I mentioned, Marlowe is not fine as Lloyd. But Sanders worked a long time. He'd been in Rebecca many years before this. And then The Picture of Dorian Gray a few years before this. And we'll go on to voice Shere Khan in The Jungle Book.
Hmm.
Sticking with the theme of the supporting player, Celeste Holm. We just mentioned her. I'm going to tell a brief story about her that I've always thought was so stupid. She tells a story, I think it's even on the commentary of the DVD, that one day Bette Davis walked in. Celeste Holm was nice to everybody and said, hello, how's everyone doing? And Davis, or good morning, or something. What's good about it, was the response from Bette Davis. Well, I never talked to her again. The way she describes the story, I'm probably misquoting it, but that was essentially the thrust of it. That Davis was a little bit rude one day, and that's it. Throw the table over, I'm never talking to her. It's just, what is wrong with you? That's the ego of a Hollywood person, I guess.
Apparently she's not the only one that Davis was quite rude to. Apparently, Davis had no time for the ingenue Marilyn Monroe on set.
Oh, yes,
yeah,
right.
He was quite rude to her and freaked her out and made her, like, go throw up in the bathroom because she made her so anxious about her performance. Intimidating woman. Apparently, they rewrote the script a touch once she got cast. Originally, Margot was supposed to be kind of just a more sweet and likable character, but once Bette Davis got cast, they were like, let's make her more caustic and abrasive.
Because Davis can pull that off.
Yeah, and she really did.
But quickly more about Holm. She won the Oscar for Gentleman's Agreement 3 years before this film, and she managed to live for 95 years.
Yeah.
So 62 years after All About Eve, she was still alive.
She was just like getting by on her moral righteous indignation. Yes.
How dare Bette Davis be somewhat rude to me? You just mentioned Marilyn Monroe, of course. The first time we're going to see her, we'll see her in a little while with Some Like It Hot, the end of the decade, where she smokes up the screen with Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon. But this was not her debut, I don't think, but it was one of her early movies. She was also in the Asphalt Jungle John Huston movie that same year, 1950, and then she started hitting it big.
I can see how she would have stood out. She's very charming.
Well, Roger Ebert's review talks about how in that, I guess, two or three scenes, that all eyes are drawn to her, not just because she's great looking, but because it's hard not to be drawn to her. That's the kind of actress she was.
Yeah.
You mentioned her way back when we talked about who the biggest star in the history of the business is.
Yeah.
She was your choice.
Yeah, I think we were talking about the AFI's list of the biggest stars, and that's who I just naturally assumed they would have picked. She's just such an iconic actress.
Mm-hmm. And yet she's only in two AFI movies, and very briefly in this one. We mentioned Thelma Ritter, her first of two AFIers. She's going to be in Rear Window with a much bigger role, because she's in the movie pretty much throughout. Jimmy Stewart's by far the biggest star of that movie. But she, Grace Kelly, and Stewart are on screen in as a duo or a threesome a lot. It's a really good three-hander with those people. The other two guys, we've talked about them already, Gary Merrill, who later became Betty Davis's husband in real life.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
And now here's the trivia question we sort of blew on earlier. How old is he supposed to be in this movie? Margot says it.
He's 8 years younger than her, and she is 40, so he's 32.
He's 32. He looks 32. He looked 32 a few years ago. He looked 32 10 years from now. I hate men. And then Hugh Marlowe. And moving on. Oh, and we talked about Ambassador plenty, but just her credits, if you will. She'd been in The Magnificent Ambersons, the Wells film, quite a few years before this. And she would go on to be in The Ten Commandments. And she won an Oscar for The Razor's Edge a few years before this in the supporting category. So I mentioned Joe Mankiewicz already. He later made Sleuth and Julius Caesar and the infamous Cleopatra. And he's been talked about in our list before, our podcast before, I should say. Because one of my clues had been who won... John Huston, that's what it was. He had won the writing and directing Oscars for Treasures of the Sierra Madre. Who would do it next for an AFI film? Mankiewicz for this film was the person, but he also did the year before for a movie that didn't make the list, A Letter to Three Wives. So 2 years in a row, he was the best director and one of the best writers. Of course, they had two different categories of screenplay. We already talked about Zanuck. Daryl F. Zanuck presents at the beginning of the film, and I talked about his credentials already. He's the one who changed the title from Best Performance.
Yeah.
He liked that in the opening narration by Addison, he says, "I'm going to tell you a story all about Eve," I think is how it goes, and he liked that better.
I think I like Best Performance better. I think that would have been a more appropriate
title. A little more generic, though.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
I guess so.
A movie we're going to do next week, A Place in the Sun, I'm going to give away that already, was also a title that was changed because it had been made before, I guess, and didn't do well. An American Tragedy had been called before, but A Place in the Sun is kind of generic, too.
Yeah.
So sometimes they change titles and they're not better, sometimes they are better, and sometimes it's kind of like a wash, like there's nothing wrong with it, but it doesn't really stand out.
You know, most of the time it's probably just about marketing. They just want to get butts in the seat, so whether it's the most appropriate title or not isn't really their concern.
A lot of times it's producers and studios are afraid of certain words, you know, like a movie was made, it didn't succeed. I think that John Carter that was out last year, which didn't succeed, but before it even came out, it was supposed to be called John Carter of Mars, but Mars Needs Moms was an enormous flop.
That's right.
So we have to be scared off by Mars.
Yeah, and movies with the word American do well. So that's why there's so many movies with American Pie, American Beauty, television shows.
Too. American in Paris, we're going to do that pretty
soon. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, American Chopper, all these TV shows and movies. Yeah, because it gets people to see the movie because it interests them.
Not a lot of people have talked about behind the scenes, and we're starting to lose our voices a little more. So let's get into that quickly. Alfred Newman, who won 9 Oscars, but not for this film. He did compose the music. He was a Fox employee, much like Zanuck. And he wrote music for Wuthering Heights, The Grapes of Wrath, and several big ones like The King and I and How the West Was Won, which is a score that people rave about all the time. Now, the influence for All About Eve is pretty extensive. The first and obvious one, for me at least, is Showgirls. Because Showgirls steals directly from this movie. Many movies have, but that one really steals from it. And right down to it being performance. It's not about, I want to kill you, or I want to take your job in this performance business we have. Although that's a terrible movie.
I don't think the homosexual undertones are really any that subtle in that movie either.
They're over the top.
Yes.
No.
Along with just about everything else about that movie.
And Elizabeth Berkley, who's not a bad actress, is just terrible in that
She's film. Just terrible.
Yeah. She knows how to play the sex scenes, but not
it's
much else.
It's a great, bad movie. It is like one of my favorite terrible movies.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but I've never forgotten it.
It's hilarious.
There was a TV movie in 1973 called Applause. Simple enough title, I would say. And if you look up All About Eve on Wikipedia, there are about a dozen TV shows that have made reference to or even had an entire episode based on All About Eve.
It's kind of like A Christmas Carol or something. It's just one of those really widely homaged movies.
And even though this isn't a stalker film, you could suggest that every stalker movie that follows probably has... Probably
Elements.
Owes a debt.
Yeah.
The single white female, or the hand that rocks the cradle, the fan.
Mm-hmm.
In all those cases, those people turn murderous. But there's always that element, though. If somebody really is following somebody that closely and worships somebody that much, do they want to off that person?
They're probably off the rocker a little. Like, there's probably the screw loose there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the 50s, like, stalkers just weren't as big a deal as we kind of understand them to be now. So if somebody goes to every single performance of your play... It wouldn't have been a red flag back then the way it certainly would be now.
And someone who's supposed to be a big star like Margot would have some kind of security, I would think.
Yeah, that too.
The awards and other AFI lists. Now, this movie, if I didn't say this already, was nominated for 14 Oscars. That's still a record that Titanic has matched. Titanic won more, but that was a record for a long time. It won 6 Best Picture over Sunset Boulevard, Best Director, the screenplay, the supporting actor George Sanders, the costumes, and the sound. The other 8 nominations for the 2 leading actresses, 2 supporting actresses, editing, cinematography for the sets, and for Newman's music. Made the National Film Registry the 2nd year. They started that with 1990. And Eva Harrington, who the more we talk about it, I find this to be a debatable choice, but the 23rd most horrible bad girl on the heroes and villains list. I'm not so sure she's flat out a bad guy.
I disagree with you. I think she is a pure villain and a delectable, delicious villain who I love to watch. She is an unabashed sociopath, and I just, like, I love when there's, like, nothing redeemable about a villain like her.
So you're calling Jay Leno a sociopath?
Look, I never said I agreed straight up with that analogy. <That's> I think true. I could poke a few holes in your Jay Leno analogy.
Anyway, so the film, All About Eve, was 9th on the top 100 quotes list for Fasten Your Seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night. And I want to talk about that in a few minutes. And this is something I don't usually mention, but because it's Betty Davis, our only time to talk about her, she was the 2nd best actress on the top 25 actresses list when they did the top 25 actress, top 25 actresses. Why mention it? Because it is Betty Davis. Oh. She was tremendous.
I can't say I've seen very many of her films. I've seen some of her TV stuff I remember seeing when I was younger, but I can't really think of another major performance.
Whatever Happened to Baby Jane wasn't going to make this, but it's a movie that people will talk about a lot, but it's pretty campy. She and Joan Crawford are both pretty over the top, but it's a memorable film at least. Now, I said I wanted to talk about the line, the great line. It made the top 10 quotes. I almost croaked right through it, but I did get it out, I think. I think it's interesting that she says, it's going to be a bumpy night. In other words, I'm going to be...
a bitch.
A bitch. We'll just say it. I mean, let's face it. That's not that bad.
I can't tell you how many times the word bitch came up in all the reviews I read online for this movie. People were not shy about calling this a bitchy film.
Okay. So during that party, she's not, though. She's self-pitying a little bit, and she's upset. What it is that she should have said... fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy next day. Because during the audition the next day, when Eve knocks them dead and she's angry, that's when she has the big fight with Lloyd, and she gets in a fight with Bill as well. But it's the fight with Lloyd about when do they think that they wrote the script? Usually when they have to rewrite and rethink the words to keep people from leaving the theater. Which is another great quote. I misquoted it, but it's a great basic idea of the quote.
And she just she's angry. It hard.
And she finds out that Eve was getting that audition from Addison.
That's right.
Which isn't his fault, but he's the one that tells her when she gets there. But she's late, so it's her own fault, and it's one of those things where, it's the next day when she's the bitch. It's not really that night, when she's just really just drunk and a little bit
irritating.
Yeah,
she's just being melancholy and self-absorbed, making the piano player play the same sad song over and over again. Yeah. And she's kind of turns it on later in the night when she kind of ends the party and tries to kick everybody out and... trying to get...
But she's really not that bad, though.
No.
As you said, she's...
The next day, the fireworks really are safe.
It's more the actors that had an issue, or at least one actress had an issue with the other, being Monroe was scared of her. Miss Caswell and Margot have a big problem, but there's, like, it's a small one. And what school... Here's some trivia for you. What school of dramatic art does DeWitt say that Miss Caswell went to?
She's a graduate of the Copacabana School of Dramatic Arts. Totally mouthed it with me. Did just I? Yes, you did.
I didn't mean to do that. When I first saw this movie, I'd never heard of the Copacabana. So is I didn't it know a, that. So oh, I didn't know, I didn't get the line. I didn't know I was funny. Yeah. Good line, though. Yeah, so that's a great quote, and it's, in a way, not really true.
No, I guess not.
She's although maybe she planned to be an ass and then just kind of pulled back and said, I can't be bothered.
Just got drunk and sad and ruined Bill's party.
So quick parting thoughts before we both croak our last words here.
I love this movie. Mm. I just love it. It is one of my favorite classic films. And I'm disappointed to hear that it's kind of dropping in stature on the list.
Sunset Boulevard was higher than it both times on the FI lists.
I disagree.
I think, and maybe that's because it's a movie about movies and people in the business are going to prefer. It's also a probably better directed film and maybe got, well, they're both kind of funny, but I'm a Sunset Boulevard fan. We talked about that last week.
Yeah, well, we're just going to have to agree to disagree.
Well, hey, I do like All I Believe a lot, too. Oh, I know, no doubt about it. Great film. Absolutely not a top 100 film. If I had a list, I'd have to find room for it somewhere. So up next on the Top 100 Project is our first George Stevens film since the much-loathed Swing Time quite a while ago. This time it's Stevens's, as we said a few minutes ago, A Place in the Sun. And this is also our first peek at Elizabeth Taylor and Montgomery Clift, a great actor, and she was a great actress for that matter. So the coming attractions trivia question for A Place in the Sun. It's a little wordy, so bear with me. Of the 5 films from the 1950s that were on the 1998 list, but not on the 2007 list, A Place in the Sun had the shortest way to fall, from 92nd to nada. What had the longest drop for a 1950s picture that didn't make the 2007 cut? Hope that's clear.
That's hard. So the answer to that will be in next week's podcast for A Place in the Sun. If you would like more trivia for All About Eve, as well as all the other movies that we've covered on the podcast, please go to our website, top100project.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the Top 100 Project on iTunes. You can also find us on Podomatic, top100project.podomatic.com. We'd love for you to weigh in on the debate about which film is better, All About Eve or Sunset Boulevard. Send us an email. You can reach us at top100projectpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, everybody.
And cut.